Hello and welcome to How Green is Your Deal, a podcast about Europe's path to climate neutrality. This podcast is part of Green Deal Net, a Jean Monnet network that brings together research and teaching on EU climate and sustainability governance. To understand current EU climate policy, it is important to know where it comes from and how we got there. So today we are going to zoom out a little bit and talk about trends in EU climate policy making and how the European Green Deal builds on or breaks away from these trends. To help us answer these questions, we are joined today by Claire Dupont, a professor at Ghent University who has worked on various aspects of EU climate policy making, and she has recently published an article on the topic, which as always will be linked in the show notes. Hi Claire, thank you so much for joining today.
Hi Anna, thanks for inviting me.
Yes. So as I said, you recently published an article on like three decades of EU climate policy making. Were there some trends or themes you were able to distinguish in this period?
Yeah. So first, this article, of course, was a collaborative effort. So there were plenty of insights from the different scholars who were working on it. And we tried very hard to distill trends and patterns from the literature that we are all very familiar with and dig into new literature on EU climate policy and governance. And we came up with the five main patterns that we see in EU climate governance over the last three decades. So the first is that EU climate policy is kind of structured around the setting of targets to reduce greenhouse gas emissions at decadal intervals. So we had a target to 2020, a target to 2030, and we're now busy deciding on a target to 2040. The second pattern that we identified was that this target setting is then followed by the European Commission proposing a package of legislative measures that are supposed to implement that target. So it's not a single piece of legislation, but a package of different measures. The third pattern then was that there over time was an increasing emphasis on the importance of an integrated approach across a range of policy domains, policy strategies, and in a multi-level governance context, that this would be a very important way of implementing our targets, starting particularly in the 2000s with an integrated climate and energy policy approach, which has expanded over time, and we'll talk about that in a moment. A fourth pattern was that there are main pillars of EU climate policy that have been in place since the early 2000s, and they have really remained as part of EU climate governance since. Those include the policy on the emissions trading system, renewable energies, and energy efficiency. And a final pattern that we identified was that EU climate policy and governance was really overwhelmingly focused on climate mitigation. So that's about reducing greenhouse gas emissions. And adaptation policy was for a long time neglected in EU climate policy governance. And that's over three decades of analysis.
Yes. So quite interesting to see that the EU has kind of stuck to a similar approach then in the way they approach things, you know, with the targets and these packages, but then also what is inside these packages, largely like building on each other then, I think I can say. Now, of course, we have this European Green Deal. How does it build on these trends? Does it maybe differ in some of these aspects?
So the interesting thing with the European Green Deal is that it does build on these past patterns and trends, but in some aspects it breaks away from those. And I think I can go through them in the sense that when we're talking about the European Green Deal, it's a far more holistic approach that is taken, far more holistic than previously. It extends the policy focus to include all sectors and systems. So this is something quite new under the current framework for climate policy, the European Green Deal. And we also see that although we stick with the patterns of setting targets and then implementing measures, there's a lot of expansion there. So the targets have been ramped up through the legislative discussions. The policy packages have been maintained, but they've really expanded in scope. And we also have the integrated approach has been maintained, but is also, you know, expanding. And the quality of the integrative work seems to be much higher than in past efforts. And we also see that there is an expansion political political approach that has expanded. So there is an acknowledgement under the European Green Deal that there is a much wider effect of the policy. So the scope, the breadth, the depth of all the central policy measures is really expanded. And we have new policy measures under the European Green Deal that we've never had before. They expanded into the social domain. For example, we have a social climate fund. They expanded into the external trade aspects. We now have a carbon border adjustment mechanism. So far more expansion into areas where the EU wouldn't previously have made policies on. And the last observation under the European Green Deal is that we have now a higher emphasis on adaptation policy than previously. Although I think for now we can still say that it's the mitigation aspects of the European Green Deal's climate policy that still remain the highest area of focus, but adaptation has certainly become more emphasized.
Mm-hmm. So the keyword really seems to be expansion, in like all different kinds of directions, expansion of the targets, expansions of the sectors, expansion of the policy instruments. And then now also, like you said, touching on things or areas it hasn't really touched upon before. So that's really nice to see. In recent years, there's also been, I feel like, a lot of public attention or political attention to EU climate policy. Sometimes then people say, okay, maybe this facilitates climate policy making when we look at the protests. In other times, it also seems to make it a little bit more difficult if we think about examples of the nature restoration law. Can you say a little bit more about how policytization and EU climate policy making have interacted with each other?
Politicization is an idea that the higher the salience of an issue in societal discourse or political discourse, the greater the numbers of actors or the constellation of actors involved in the policymaking process, and then the higher the risks of polarization around the issue. So there's a kind of a balance also in the literature to be found between politicization that serves the advancement of policy and then politicization that actually holds policy development back. And I don't think there's necessarily agreement in the literature on what that level is. So you do see, especially in climate literature, a call to ensure that the climate issue remains politicized, because that means the issue is salient. That means it's been discussed. There's attention being paid to it. And we do know historically, if attention is diverted away from climate change, then we're less likely to see climate policy. That was certainly part of the situation around the time of the financial crisis in 2008 and onwards. What we see, interestingly, though, in the European Green Deal implementation period is that the crises that we have undergone in the last years haven't necessarily diverted the tension away from climate policy. So we seem to have a higher threshold at this time when it comes to issue salience remaining still a key factor for pushing policy, but the polarization doesn't kick in so much. Maybe because we've come to a point where climate change is a very topical issue that everybody's aware of. At the same time, we do have to be aware of polarization, because under conditions of polarization, you cannot reach agreement, and then you end up in situations where policy can be delayed or even set aside, or it can be such a source of divergent opinions, agreement can't be reached. So there needs to be some care taken when we're talking about politicization as a means to ensure that climate policy remains on the political agenda. There's care to be taken there. And I think we see also that there has been some backlash societally on both in terms of lack of action on climate change. So when people are really starting to suffer the impacts of climate change, there is societal unrest at the fact that their governments or the EU is not able to step in as much and as not helping as much as they would expect, but also on policy. So when you have policies that are seen as unfair or unjust or that are seen as affecting their lives, people's lives too much, and there's no understanding of why that is necessary, or is that really the right way to go, then we also see backlash. And so I think we have to watch out for that. The nature restoration law is an excellent example of this. It's also not per se a climate measure. And I think this is what's also very interesting about the European Green Deal. It's not only a climate policy package, you know, it's an overarching framework towards sustainability. So there are all sorts of nature and environmental aspects to it as well. You know, we want to have zero pollution. We want to have a better quality environment and good quality nature. We need to have nature-based solutions and nature restoration. And so we seem to have this situation now where climate policy is accepted and understood as necessary, but we have less of a history of working on nature in the same way, or biodiversity, that there's maybe it's more subject to the polarization that we once saw, say, 15 years ago on climate policy.
I think it's interesting to see, you know, like you said, how there can be this tension in political attention as well, that we think that often it's a good thing, but then if it can then lead to this polarization as well, how do you deal with it? And as you said before, like making sure that the policies are clear to who is actually experiencing them, or that you realize where they're coming from or what they're trying to do. So I think that's a very interesting point you made there. As you mentioned also in the beginning, like now the EU has started to discuss a target for 2040. What can you, I mean, I'm not going to say predict because we cannot look into the future. But if you look at like now all this research on this last three decades of EU climate policy, are there some expectations you have for 2040, or is there a certain direction you see EU climate policy moving towards?
So we're recording this, of course, just a couple of days after the European Commission published its communication on the 2040 target. And I think there are a few things that stand out with their publication. So they propose a target of 90% for 2040, which is in line with, for example, the scientific advice of the European Scientific Advisory Board on Climate Change. They had proposed a range up to 95%. And of course, the Commission chose the low end as their way forward. But what I also found very interesting is that it is published at a time of societal unrest, particularly with the farmers' protests, and in advance of European elections that we already see are likely to be quite contentious. So for the 2040 target, I think we need to watch out for the fact that there aren't too many incoherencies entering into the discussion on the target and who contributes to achieving that target. And I think we now see the concessions in the Commission's proposal towards the agricultural sector, where they're not specifically mentioned as having responsibilities for reducing emissions, which is just a way of pushing the problem down the road. And we know that the quicker you act on reducing your emissions, the more resilient you are in the future towards the impacts of climate change, or the security aspects of climate change or energy. So it seems it's a short-sighted measure or short-sighted response to a societal unrest, when in fact a more meaningful response would have been to really engage on addressing the core drivers of the unsustainability in agriculture, and how can we overcome those core drivers towards 2040 and then again towards 2050 when we want to be climate neutral. And so for 2040, I think we have to, you know, because the process is like this, we now have the communication from the European Commission. Then at some point in the next Commission policy cycle, there will be a proposal for, you know, making that a decision of the European Union. And so we're at that point where we're preempting the elections and preparing for the worst almost in the elections. Whereas in fact, there's an opportunity now to really be brave and courageous about, well, what we really need is this transformational change. And that transformation can be for the better. We can think about how that transformation can be good for farming, for food, for transport, for our quality of life, for air pollution, the reducing of it. Many things can come together to show that lives can be better in a climate neutral society. But the choices need to be made now about how we do that in a socially equitable and just manner. And that's where I feel, even though the just transition was part of the European Green Deal, we haven't necessarily done a good job in Europe at really defining and implementing what a just transition really would look like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's something we talked about in one of the earlier episodes as well. If you haven't listened to the one on the social dimension, I think that is quite interesting as well, because there Amandine Crespi, the guest for that one, she also explains how, you know, the social dimension is a bit of a side note where it should really be on the center. And I think what you're saying earlier as well about the importance of, you know, communication as also why you're doing certain things and also the benefits of the climate transition rather than only the cost that people see, it's so important as well. And it's then a shame when opportunities like now where you can go into dialogue with the agricultural sector, with the farmers, are then perhaps a little bit lost. Maybe in line with this final question, when we are talking about the future of the planet or anything else, is there something that still gives you hope when you think about the future, or something that you're excited about?
So one of the things that I now kind of take for granted is that the energy transition is happening. So we are transitioning away from fossil fuels in our energy system, and it's moving much more quickly than we had anticipated just even 5 years ago. So this is a real positive sign. I think that can already get us quite a significant way on the path towards climate neutrality if we keep that up and if we make sure it really is implemented. Where I'm a bit worried is on precisely the justice and social aspects. And I think it's more than communication. I think it's really co-creating a vision. And I think we don't have, you know, the European Green Deal, it's not an inspiring vision of the future. It's most people don't really understand what that means or the implications. So I think there's an opportunity for like a societal wide debate and discussion about what you want your future to look like. And how can we have that vision pushed in our policy? How can we strive for that vision together, collectively? And I think so the justice and social aspects of that need this sort of vision where we have to really engage through democratic processes and strengthen democratic processes to make sure that we get there. But yeah, I have hope because the technology is there and it's working and we're doing it. We just need to get the social and justice aspects properly aligned.
Thanks so much for that, Claire, and thanks for sharing all of your insight with us today.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
That's it for this episode. If you enjoyed it, please subscribe to How Green Is Your Deal on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you are listening. If you want to stay informed on Green Deal Net's activities, please go to greendealnet.eu and subscribe to the newsletter.